On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, look, stop interrupting me when...
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Hey, welcome to the program. How you doing? Good to be with you, man. You're looking cool today. Did you do something different with your hair? Didn't you used to wear it on the other side of your face with the part down the back of your ass? Didn't you? That's what it is. It's the color. It wasn't always blue, was it? That's right. That's what. Did you do something with the color of your eyes? That's what I thought, yeah, because now they're purple, and I don't remember them being, I think they were brown before, am I right? That's what it is. Yeah, did you do something different with your face? Oh, you had the mole removed, that's what it is. I thought that was your second nose with pus coming out of it. That's what it is. Is there something different about your neck? Didn't you used to have a large tattoo on your... Oh, that wasn't a tattoo? It was a birthmark. And wasn't it like... Didn't it look like Arnold Schwarzenegger taking a crap on the toilet? Yes, that's what it was. Did you have it removed? Oh, you're wearing a turtleneck. Oh. Whatever happened to turtlenecks, by the way? Do you remember the turtleneck? Yeah, it's a shirt that has a neck like a turtle. And what a fashion statement. What are you wearing today? I remember people dressing in turtlenecks, and not so much anymore. I'd say the turtleneck... barometer has gone down considerably. I think people like decades ago used to wear turtlenecks in the winter, maybe about 40% of the time. Now it's sinking down to like 0.2% of the population of the universe wears a turtleneck. I don't know who invented the thing. Somebody said, here's a great fashion idea. It's going to make people look great. Let's dress them like the beautiful, sleek, and lovely-looking turtle. Yeah, that's what we'll do. So that when people are cold in the winter, they put the turtleneck on, and their head can just disappear inside of their clothing. What a turn-on. Oh, baby, you are so hot. Show me some more cleavage, why don't you? What a hot-looking outfit that is. I am so turned on by turtles, it's not funny. I can't go to the pond anymore without having some type of an erection because of all these turtles. Don't even talk about the frogs. I just can't even control myself. I don't know where and then back in the 50s and 60s, they had an article of clothing, which they still have a little bit, although nobody wears it, nobody's calling it this, but it was called a dickie. No, it wasn't that you strap around your crotch. No, that's not what a dickie is, kids. The Dickie, wow, man. The Dickie was a turtleneck, but they cut out everything but the turtleneck part and a little bit of the front of the chest. They took the entire shirt away, including the arms and the shoulders, and it was called a Dickie. I don't know why they called it a Dickie, to be honest with you, because I just, of all the things to call part of a shirt, a Dickie? Come on, man. Call it a turtlenecky or a neckful something, but a Dickie? Come on. Yes, it's too much trouble to wear the entire turtleneck. I'll tell you what, I'll take the turtleneck concept because it is such a warm piece of clothing, and I'll cut around everything except for the neck, and I'll sell that. It'll never go over. Nobody will ever buy it. What do you want to call it? The cocky? No. Cocky sounds like you're really full of yourself. How about the Dickie? Oh, that makes no sense. Let's do that. Man, I don't understand fashion at all. I watch some of these shows on television, Project Runway, the Last American Mohegan, I don't know what the names of these shows are, and they have these designers, like, making clothes that I mean, at no point does any guy look at these clothes and go, wow, man, that is like, that's an incredible fashion look. No, they all go, ew, you're weird. You're taking fabric and you're doing weird things with it, and then you're making people wear it. It's odd. You're odd, and there's something wrong with you. I don't know. Maybe it's me.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
What's with this controversy with a dress that some lady, I think it was a lady, was wearing at the Academy Awards? There's an argument, and my God, there are holy wars going on, there are people dying, and we're arguing about the color of a striped dress. And apparently, and I don't... Oh my God. Apparently, people are saying it's white with gold stripes, and other people are saying, no, it's blue with black stripes. Now, I can understand if you're off a little bit in the description, but white and gold as opposed to blue and black? I mean, someone's on drugs. And I think it's the black and blue people, to be honest with you. I don't know what we're arguing about. First of all, the picture is like ill-exposed to the point where that's not the way the dress really looks. So why am I arguing about a bad photograph of a portion of a dress? Has my life come down to that? Is it going to be on my headstone when I someday perhaps leave the earth, and it's going to say, no, it was white and gold? I mean, come on, people! What's wrong with you? Oh my God, I mean, maybe it's nice that we're arguing about the color of a dress as opposed to more horrific things, but I don't know, I'm chagrined about half the stuff that I see going on around me. How about you? Hey, how about you?
How do you feel? How about you?
Do you love to eat? I sure do. There's an event taking place on Wednesday, March 18th. At the time of this podcast, that's a little less than a week away. It's a little more than a week away. It's Wednesday. Hey, don't listen to me. Whatever I say, don't listen to me. It's Wednesday, March 18th from 5:30 to 8 o'clock p.m. It's at the Shaw Center in the city of Brockton, which is a town which is south of Boston by about 20 miles. And Boston's in New England, and New England is in the United States. The United States is somewhere on the globe over there. There's going to be up to 40 area restaurants with cultural and community organizations and live entertainment and the chance to win a Mass Pass coupon book. That's not free subway rides. That's like a discount book to restaurants all over the place. Tickets are on sale now, or they're $35, but man, I'm telling you, it is well worth it. You just walk around this huge convention floor and you just taste a little bit from every restaurant. There's no charge. You've already paid it in a ticket. You have as much as you want to eat. You have whatever you want. And it's just little pieces of all kinds of food. It's very, very cool. Tickets are on sale now. I don't believe they're going to be selling at the door, so don't fool around with this one. It's called A Taste of Metro South. Here's how you get them. You can either call the office there, the Metro South Chamber, at 508-586-0500. That's 508-586-0500. Perhaps you are a restaurant and you want to participate in this and have people taste your food. You can call that number as well. Best thing to do to get tickets, because everything is now so web-oriented, you can go to MetroSouthTaste.com. That's MetroSouthTaste.com. My God, it's got its own website. MetroSouthTaste.com. It's an event that if you miss it and you're geographically close enough to go to it, you're going to kick yourself in the ass and say, I should have gone. I'll pay tickets. I'll pay $35 just to watch you try to kick yourself in the ass, because for many of you, it's anatomically impossible to do. I would pay money to see you try to do it. I think it would just be loads of fun for everybody in the world.
Okay, get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
All right, here's my funny story. Actually, my funny story has a lot to do with food, the psychological effects of food. Sounds like a term paper for high school, doesn't it? All right, here's what it's about, man. When I was younger, I was still in high school, and my parents liked me so much that when school was out and the summer came along, my parents packed me in a trunk and shipped me out to summer camps, which they called sleepaway camps. Reason being, you sleep away from your house. It should be called Get Your Kids Out of the House and Get a Life Camp. So that's what they did. As soon as school was over, I'd had like 2 or 3 days to enjoy doing nothing. And then my parents would pack up everything that I needed in order to survive and send me to a camp for the entire summer for like 6 to 8 weeks. And I didn't like it sometimes. Sometimes I did. Toward the end of my, and they did this like for, I'd say about 6 years. Yeah. Hey, they couldn't get they would go traveling, I guess, during the summer. And this is their way of getting rid of the annoying kid, which was me. So eventually, I was going to this camp so much every year that they actually offered me a job at the camp. And rather than be a camper, they said, Ron, do you want to be the dramatics counselor? And I said, are you kidding me? I don't speak German. They said, no, not Germanics, dramatic counselor. You put on a couple of plays during the summer with the kids, and it's cool, and we'll pay you a little bit of money. And we'll give you actually a little apartment thing. You don't spend a day with the campers. We're going to give you your own apartment like off site. And I said, "Fuck yeah, I'll do that. You bet your little bums." So it did. So for about a 2 year period, I was a camp counselor, but I didn't have to sleep with the children, Mr. Michael Jackson. There is a way to engage with children without sleeping in the bed with them, FYI, if you were still alive. So I had this place kind of looked like a jail cell. It wasn't too bad. It was a room that was about 14 by 16 feet, which isn't horrible. And it had a bed in it, and it actually had a sink and a toilet in it, just like a real jail cell. But it had a little kitchenette area and a chair and a little couch, and it really wasn't so bad for a recluse like myself who hated children since birth. I even hated myself. When I was born, I said to myself, I'm a child. Ick. As soon as I could become an adult, like at three, I had a job. I went to work. I took the train. 3 years old. No, I'm kidding. So anyway, that's what I did. And you would work with the camp kids during the, and by the way, this was in upstate New York where every single real camp is located, somewhere near the Catskills or that kind of thing. This was in a town called Roscoe, New York. If I had to find it today, you'd probably have to kill me because I have absolutely no idea where it was. I just know it was somewhere up there. Probably, I really don't know. It was around Syracuse or a little bit south of it, equidistant from Binghamton, New York, and New York City. It took about 7 hours to get to New York City, which I would go to on the weekends. Some of the counselors and myself would get on a bus and go down to New York City. It was about 8 hours away, 7 hours away. Anyway, you don't care about that. So I would work with the kids during the day putting on these little plays, and I would write some of the plays. Yeah, I did. I wrote little horror plays, you know, and the kids loved doing the little horror things because there was makeup involved and all that kind of stuff. And I could have some of the kids do the makeup and some of the kids do other, you know, they love that stuff. Oh, they love that stuff. So at the end of the day, myself and the rest of the counselors, who were all kind of like high school age, which was a great age because we were feeling our sexual oats, man. You know, it was just a wonderful time. There was a female camp that was just, it was like right there. I mean, there was the male, there was the boy camp. And then there was the dining hall, and on the other side of the dining hall was the girls' camp. So it was like right there. You didn't have to like swim a pond or something. They're like right there. So as counselors, we were a bit promiscuous with the other counselors, and we had just some of those summers were the discovery years of my life, if you know what I mean. So the male and female counselors would gather together at a place that was about a half a mile away from the campgrounds where I was staying, where I had my room in this little apartment area. And we would go into this little, they called it a canteen, and I don't know what the fuck that means. I think it's something that if you're in the desert, you put your water in this container and you drink from it. I don't know what it has to do with a place where you sit down at a counter and you can order food. This place was open till about midnight, and, you know, us sexually hungry counselors would hang out there. There was no other place to hang out, and we'd, you know, do some nookie-nookie and stuff. And really all they had was a couple of little sandwiches that they would make and bagels. And the reason I'm telling this story is that at about 11 o'clock at night, about an hour before they closed, there'd be some, like, maybe three or four couples there, you know, of male and female counselors. And there would be this aroma of burnt bagel. These people had these industrial-sized toasters, not the kind that they had in the homes. They don't even have toasters anymore. There's toaster ovens, not too many toasters. Back then, there were toasters made for big, thick bagels. And they would take the people who ran this canteen food service place, where we were sitting and congregating, would slice the bagels in half and put them into this industrial-sized toaster. And after about, I'd say, a minute and a half, 2 minutes, you would get this constant smell of burnt bagel. And normally people go, oh, your bagel's burning. Me, it's romantic. It's just the smell of a time past. And they would take the burnt bagel. It wouldn't be like black burnt, but it would be smelly burnt. And they would take a knife and smatter on this cream cheese that probably had a fat content of an entire cow. And I would eat this thing at like a quarter to midnight just before I went to bed, which is a horrible thing to do, by the way. Tons of calories just before you lie down and go to sleep. Ugh. And we would, you know, and I was in high school, but we used to sneak alcohol, you know, outside of the canteen and, you know, make a little lovey-dovey stuff going on, you know, a little making out stuff, a little Barry White in the background. Oh, no, baby. Oh, no, looking fine, baby. And I would have this burnt bagel and cream cheese. And that's the point of this. Whenever I have a bagel, which is not frequently because they're just poisonous. Really, they are poisonous. Yeah, they're like a snake bite. It's a snake bite. Oh, that's going to kill me. Or a large bagel. That's going to kill me too. Cream cheese on it, you're going to go even faster. Depending on how old you are, you know, you can eat all the bagels you want when you're 20, 30 years old. When you get to be a senior, then we have to check it out, check with your doctor, the whole bit. But the smell of a bagel in a toaster, to me, it just brings me back in time to this thing. And think about smells. Is there a food or a dish that your mother used to make when you were a little kid? And if you close your eyes, you can smell that food. It may not have been your favorite food when your mother was cooking for you or your father or whoever was doing it, whatever, however you were brought up. But there's a smell that you associate with that time period, hands down, no question about it. You could forget everything else in the world, but if you smell something, it brings you right back to a certain point and a certain time with clarity like you wouldn't believe. And I embrace that. And that's the importance of the senses of sight, yes, sound, yes, taste, yes, but smell. There's something about the smell. When I'm at a shopping center or one of those strip malls, Chickabow Wow strip mall, these Chinese restaurants are very smart. They have a blower system, I guess, and it blows out. I don't know if they do it on purpose or it's just their exhaust system, but you're walking in the strip mall and you smell this Chinese food smell, which I think is like MSG. They should make a woman's perfume called MSG. You put a little bit behind your ears and everybody wants to eat you. Everybody wants to eat you out. Hey, stop it. I don't even know what I said. I'm not sure. But that's an aroma that people stop and they go, I got to have Chinese food. I don't care what it is. I got to have Chinese food. Oh my God, I smell it. I got to have Chinese food. Do you ever walk into a place or a restaurant or outside a restaurant and there's this faint smell of garlic? Now, I don't like garlic in my system. It makes me feel sick. But the smell of it, yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. There's no garlic perfume. Thank God. There's no garlic perfume. There's no bacon perfume. Everybody loves bacon. I don't care for Kevin Bacon, but he's different. He just took the name of real bacon. There's no bacon. Well, maybe there is. Maybe there is. Maybe I'm not just aware. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I should go to Macy's up to the cosmetic counter. And excuse me, old lady that is painted up like a clown. Old lady that is wearing every conceivable makeup item in your showcase on your face. Old lady. Is there a bacon smelling shampoo? That's possible too. Is there a bacon smelling perfume? And she probably look at me with those bozo eyes with the mascara running from her face as she's sweating 100 degree temperatures and she's got like 5 pounds of lard hanging off of her skin.
I don't know.
And that's my funny story.
That was a really funny story, Ron. But then again, I'm in the third grade.
You're listening to Ron Van Dam on Metro South Podcasting. Oi, he's such a mensch. I mean, a nice mensch, don't get me wrong, but still, really, a mensch.
How much do you sleep? Do you sleep 8 hours a day, 7 hours a day? What do you do? Do you take pills like Ambient, Ambiance, to get to sleep? Do you have a white noise machine or whatever? I mean, is there some ritual you go through? Apparently sleep is very, very important. And we spoke to a woman named Jenny Plus, who does, she's on television all the time as this house renovation expert, I believe is what she is. And we talk about sleep. And we had this interview yesterday. Haven't played it yet. Going to play it for you right now. Let's say hello to Jenny. Jenny Poulos joins us now. She's a working mom, comedian, and reality TV star on Bravo's home design show, Flipping Out. Pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Boston, and you, Ron.
Yes. Where are you? What part of the country are you in as we speak right now?
New York City. And it's snowing.
Snowing, yes. Actually, snowing more there than it is here for a change. So there you go.
There you go.
There you go. So, yeah.
Yes, you know, and we're springing forward, Ron, even though... It doesn't seem like it.
It doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense.
The topic today is sleeping sounder, better, longer, stronger.
Yeah, how's that happen? I mean, I read in the notes here that most people have trouble sleeping on Sunday nights, and I thought to myself, yeah, you know, that's true. I do have trouble falling asleep Sunday nights, and I don't know why.
Yeah, in a recent study, Americans that struggle to fall asleep on Sunday, 68% attribute it to upcoming stresses.
Oh.
So I guess anticipating the week, whether that's work or school or whatever's on the plate. So I think the key here and why I'm excited to partner with Febreze and ZQuil is that we have to get back into a routine of treating ourselves to unwind. You know, I have a young daughter and she's on a routine and a schedule, and when her sleep schedule's interrupted, you know, it affects her. And isn't that the same for us?
Yeah.
But we've almost been running on a competition where it's like, oh, I can get 4 hours and be fine. But the truth is, I don't think that we are fine. I think that it affects us in many areas: productivity, focus, energy, and overall happiness.
Yeah. So what can we do about it, though?
Well, I think number one, again, is making adjustments to a routine. So a half hour before bed, put away your phone, put away the electronics, turn off the TV, retreat into your bedroom, which then the design aspect comes in of painting your room a color, you know, taking those small steps to make it something that you want to be in that room. You want to retreat. You feel soothed in there.
Okay.
I love this Febreze's product, the Sleep Serenity Bedroom Mist. It not only eliminates odors in the room, but it creates a soothing scent so you can relax.
That's good.
Cozy bedding's amazing. A nice fan. There's great vintage fans that look great on a credenza or a ceiling fan, an air purifier. I have a sound machine, so I sleep by the ocean, Ron, and I really love that.
I also have one. It's like a white noise kind of thing, and I can't sleep without it now.
I know. It becomes very addicting, and it's lovely to kind of drown out the other sounds, like my pug that snores, if you have animals in your room, you know. But I think, again, it's setting the mood, and obviously we have a time change happening, so if you are still suffering from sleeplessness occasionally, ZQuil can help you fall asleep easily. And I think the overall message is giving back to ourselves and really treating ourselves so that we can recharge and feel better.
Okay. And it is important for health, I guess. I guess you're not supposed to sleep too much, and then you're also not supposed to sleep too little.
Exactly. And I think around the 7 to 8 hours is good. Any less than that, I do think it does affect me, I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to still train ourselves to really wind down a little bit earlier and pad that time so we can have 20, 30 minutes. I even find things like breathing and actually just releasing all the stresses, whether that's jotting things down that we're afraid we're going to forget, but just kind of getting ourselves, we can train our mind if we make it a routine like the gym or anything else to actually unwind and relax.
True. Good point. Hey, it's great speaking to you. I know we're running a little short of time, but those are some excellent suggestions. Where can we go for more information?
Febreze.com and Zico.com. And well, get a good night's sleep, Ron. Let's sleep deep.
Yeah, no, you know, you get a good night. I think you need more sleep than I do. I have a feeling you're a little busier.
I don't know about that, Ron. I know you're up early. I have a feeling.
Yeah, I get up at 4 in the morning.
Oh, my. So what time do you go to bed?
I go to bed at about 9 or 10 usually, you know, but sometimes if I'm really tired, I'll just like fall asleep and then, you know, that's it. But yeah, I do this silly thing in the morning, so I don't have a choice.
All right, well, get your routine on, Ron. Next time we talk,
we'll
both feel more refreshed.
Thank you, Jenny. Okay.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks to Jenny. Thank you so much, honey, honey baby. She was very, very interested about how much sleep I get into what time I go to bed. And I thought she was going to pretty much say, well, do you like to cuddle? I mean, I thought she was going to go there, but time got short and we had to not do that. But, you know what I'm saying? I think she was interested in the Van Damme. I had that feeling. I did. I had it. I got the feeling. I had the feeling. You got the feeling. I got the feeling.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done. Carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work. I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me, waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me. Naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked. I do the work naked. You pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House. Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook where I am naked.
Welcome back to the program. My name is indeed Cheesy Butt, and it's wonderful to be with you today on this fine day of protracted agony. Ladies and gentlemen, I was watching a show last night, and they were making fun of Q-tips, and I said to myself, you know, I don't quite understand what a Q-tip really is. I know what it is. I mean, I know it's a fabricated stick that's flexible and safe, and there's like cotton swabs on both ends of the stick. Thus, the Q-tip thing, I still don't understand what that means. I don't know why. What does a Q stand for? Why a Q? Anyway, what does everybody do with a Q-tip? Raise your hand. You know the answer. Let's all say it together. We shove it in our ears. And it specifically says on this product, don't shove the freaking Q-tip in your ears. It can cause blindness or whatever. And I'm thinking, there is no product ever devised by man that has a use for it that everybody only uses it for, yet you're not supposed to use it for. I know that you can dip a Q-tip into like isopropyl alcohol and swab it on your face, or I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. I have no idea. I think it's like for fingernails or something. Or you can apply salve to it and you know, swab yourself. But what it's basically used for by everybody is to stick it in your ear and get out that yellow waxy buildup, because there's no other way to do it. They do produce a product that I believe is like a vacuum thing, and it sucks out the ear stuff. But if you ever shove the Q-tip in your ear, that stuff's not suckable. That's not a suckable entity. That's like, that's earwax, man. It's like, it's not a sucky thing. It's, you have to remove it. And what other implement would you use besides a Q-tip? I mean, you can't go in there with a forklift or with a, you know, with a bobcat. I mean, how else are you going to clean your ears out of that? And did you ever see what comes out of those ears? It's like, it's like candle wax, man. It's like yellow, yucky mustard, filthy, yucky. And you look at the end of the Q-tip and you say, was that in my ear? How did I even hear? Why is that building up in my brain? Are my brain cells full of that stuff? Should I shove the Q-tip even further to the point where the other end comes out of my other ear? I mean, like, no, you're not supposed, it'll damage your eardrums. I have eardrums? I don't think so. I think I can shove that Q-tip like all the way into my nostril. Why are you talking about? This product is just used for something totally different, and it even says don't use it for this. Do you ever remove the tag off your pillow where it says do not remove this tag off your pillow by penalty of law? Do you ever like remove the tag and all of a sudden like someone's knocking at your door in an angry fashion, and you go down there and you open the door and they, you just remove the tag from the pillow? Well, yes, I did. All right, turn around, put your hands behind your back. We told you it is arrestable offense by penalty of law. There is a law? Is there a law? Is there a federal law not to remove the tag from a pillow? What's that about? What possible harm? I'm not shoving the pillow in my ear. That I would understand is a horrible, horrible thing to do. Never shove a pillow in your ear. It says it right on the box. It says it right on the pillow. I'm out of breath, man. It's too much. It's just too much. You hear about the Jodi Arias case? Do you know about this? This is a girl who was a amateur photographer, and she was going out with a guy, and they did these incredible sexual acts, and it came out in court, all the transcripts and videos and phone conversations and texts about these, you know, I feel your chemung upon my, I feel your Q-tip in my ear, baby, I love it when you take your tongue and put it between my toes, and I've had all this, oh God, wear that dickie, oh please put that dickie on. It's just this lewd, horrible stuff, L-E-W-D. Tori caught me at a horrible spelling mistake. I spelled the word lewd, L-U-D-E. I guess like Luden's cough drops. I have no idea what I was doing. I was in a drunken stupor or something. And Tori texted me back and she says, dude, are you high? And I said, well, you know, kind of, yeah. I kind of am. And she said, no, lewd is L-E-W-D. And wow, you know how big I felt? This big. You can't see it, but I'm putting my fingers like real close together. Anyway, she was found guilty of a murder in the first degree, which is punishable by the death penalty in Arizona. Well, what is it in Arizona? Just put you outside in the desert and pretty much that's your death penalty right there. Living in Arizona. Nah, it's probably not a bad place. I really don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, she's found guilty of murder. So then they went into the penalty phase, and the same jury, this is like a year ago, same jury, was, they were a hung jury. All the guys were hung. And they said, now we can't decide whether she should be put to death or not. So according to Arizona law, then you have another death penalty phase. We're going to do a retrial just on the death penalty phase. She is guilty of murder. That's been decided. That's over. That's done. But we have to decide whether she's going to be put to death or have a life sentence, life in jail. And so they had a second trial, went through it all over again this past month. The jury was deadlocked again. But this time, interesting legal thing. And I wish I had attorney Casella here next to me, because I like his pants, to be honest with you. He wears some nice pants. And I would say to attorney Casella, I would say, look, man, here's the deal. There was one juror in this jury who apparently didn't want to discuss it. They said, no, I the death penalty is horrible. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm just against the death penalty. And the other jurors went, hey, wait a minute, man. This is a mistrial. You can't do that. When you became a juror, the judge said to you, are you open to the death penalty as a possibility? And every juror had to say, yes, I'm open to it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been on the jury. This juror is saying, I don't do death penalty. And what do we do now? So the jury went to the judge and said, this lady, she doesn't even want to discuss. She doesn't even want to deliberate. She just doesn't want the death penalty for anybody or anything. And she was, that was her agenda, and she's dead set on it. And the judge should have said, well, get rid of her, bring in the alternate, because that wasn't the idea of this thing. Because we asked her when we started doing these jury choosing things there, choosing the jury, we said, are you open to the death penalty? Had you said, no, I'm not, you would have never been on this jury, man. So she lied. She had an agenda. But the judge said, no, I'm sorry. We have to leave it the way it is. So again, now people are livid about this. They are livid because this is just a miscarriage of justice. How often these days in high-profile cases are we talking about miscarriage of justice? Ron, you're not in the courtroom. You don't know. Yeah, but why am I constantly disappointed about these odd little these little details that fuck everything up, justice system-wise. And it seems if you have enough money to get a high-powered attorney, you're going to do all right. If you're poor and you don't have the money for the high-powered attorney, you're going to get screwed. Like, justice for all? I don't think so, necessarily. Doesn't make sense. This judge on April 13th, I believe that's a Monday, at 8:30 in the morning, is going to have Jodi Arias, the convicted killer, stand in front of the judge. And the judge is going to decide, well, death penalty is off the table. She cannot be executed now because of this hung jury. The judge will decide whether Jodi Arias gets life imprisonment without the possibility of parole, like every day of the rest of your life, you're in jail. Or life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. After 25 years, you're pretty much going to hit the streets again. The judge is going to have to decide this. I can't imagine, because the judge is just being publicly pounded for allowing this jury deliberation not to take place, actually, by having this one juror that didn't even want to deliberate, didn't even want to discuss it. No death penalty for me. I don't even talk about it. You can't do that. You can't do that. But this judge allowed it. Let it pass. So that's the update on the Jodi Arias. If you're interested about that, go to your Google thing and do it on your own, because I don't have the time for you. I do have the time to say I wish that you have a wonderful day tomorrow, a nice weekend. I will be back again Monday morning at the same time. And I really hope that you join me then. I always love our time together. Whatever. That was just rude. That was rude. I'm sorry. That was rude. Have yourselves a wonderful day. Wish you peace. Bye, everybody. Yay. Go on, say yay. Go on, say it. Say it. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-ba. That was incredibly entertaining.
It was unbelievably painful.
Whatever.